Okay. All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the February 23rd, 2025 Transportation Committee hearing. First, before we get started, we have safety rules. So for the safety, security, and comfort of all attendees, please note the following guidelines. I, the committee chair, maintain control of these proceedings and establish the following expectations. Signs and placards are not permitted in the hearing room. Verbal outbursts, shouting, or disruptive behavior will not be tolerated. Applause or other audible demonstrations are not allowed, especially from co-chair Kosnick. For safety reasons, standing or sitting in walkways and aisles, or standing or obstructing at your chair is prohibited. If you require any accommodation, please speak to our sergeant staff. Troopers and house security personnel are present to ensure everyone's safety. Those providing testimony will be given specific time limits, which must be strictly observed. If you receive an entrance ticket, please retain it as it may be required for re-entry if you leave the hearing room. So failure to comply with these guidelines may result in the removal from the hearing room. Our goal is to conduct these proceedings efficiently while ensuring everyone has the opportunity to observe and participate appropriately. So that was longer than I expected it to be on here, but we'll work on it. We'll get it figured out. So. Thanks, Cagle. All right, so welcome everybody to, again, the February 23rd, 2025 Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee hearing. I am honored, just some introductions first, honored to be here as co-chair this year. It's been, I want to say thanks to co-chair Cagle for all of her work last year on transportation. So thank you for all the things that you did. Thank you, co-chair Kosnick, for working together on moving forward things. So I'm excited about where we can go this year. And also want to introduce Tenzin Sayung, who is back with transportation. He was the CLA for Chair Hornstein at one time. So really excited to have Tenzin back here in transportation world. So this we're going to have a few hearing days that have themes to them and work on that way. And so we're going to be talking about transportation and traffic and pedestrian safety here today. But before we get into that, we have the minutes of the last meeting for approval. Co-Chair Kosnick.
Chair Tapke, I move the minutes for February 18th, 2026 as presented.
Thank you very much. Chair Kosnick moves approval of the minutes for February 18th, 2026. All those in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? The minutes are approved. All right, so first we're going to go to a presentation on pedestrian safety, and I'm honored to have Joe Harrington here with Our Streets to talk through and set up what we are looking at as pedestrian and transportation safety here in the state of Minnesota. So you can come take a seat. And if you could please introduce yourselves for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good afternoon, members. My name is Joe Harrington. I'm the policy manager at Our Streets. We're a Minnesota transportation advocacy nonprofit that aims to build safe and sustainable transportation systems in vibrant communities across the state. Joined here by Michael Wojcik. I'll let Michael introduce himself as well.
Hi, my name is Michael Wojcik. I am the executive director of the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota and a member of the Advisory Council on Traffic Safety. We are looking out for citizen safety all throughout the state of Minnesota.
All right, thank you all again for having us this afternoon, and let's dig into a really important conversation to frame today's really important traffic safety conversation. We're going to dig in with some case studies, some stories, and some data trends really focused on Minnesota's most vulnerable road users, those who walk, roll, bike, and take public transit. But first, let's dig into some national trends to really answer this broader question, why are so many pedestrians dying across the U.S.? On this slide and in your packets, the darker line is what I'll be referencing here. You'll see data from 1994 to 2023 that shows the total U.S. traffic fatalities per 100,000 people. During this time period, you'll notice a couple of high-level trends. So from 1994, you'll see kind of on the far end that the number has kind of decreased since that time, and that's really, you know, between 1994 and 2009, deaths fell by nearly 25% during that period. That's around 1,500 people, lives saved every year. That's kids making it home from school. That's people making it home from jobs. That's families not being torn apart by preventable tragedies. However, you'll notice around the middle of the graph there, starting in around 2010, those gains have really been reversed. That trend's changed a lot, with pedestrian and bicycle deaths growing by over 75% from 2010 to 2022. It's really at a crisis level. That's 4,000 additional people per year across the U.S., or around 8,000 total, who are dying during these preventable tragedies. And it's unlike anything we're seeing in developed nations around the world. There's no single factor that's really shaping this crisis. And again, you can see that change over time from 2010 onward and really growing during the pandemic. Part of the problem is driver behavior and distractions. So you'll notice in around 2009, that's when smartphones became more common. And during that same period, touchscreens and other technology made their way into cars, so distracted driving has become more of an issue. Another factor, there's more larger cars on the road, and those larger cars have a higher risk for pedestrians if they're struck in the head or chest. But really at the core of this is a deeper crisis of intentional engineering and design decisions that create a system to move a lot of cars quickly rather than to keep all transportation users safe. So starting in the 60s, engineers at DOTs around the country, like at MnDOT, redesigned our cities, our towns, and our main streets under the assumption that everyone would drive everywhere they go. And in places like Minnesota, that actually hasn't turned out to be the case. One in three people statewide today don't drive to access work, school, daily needs, and opportunity. What we're left with are pictures that look like this. So on the left, you'll see Tennessee, and on the right, that is Olson Memorial Highway in Minneapolis, very similar photos of really unsafe roads, and what's left really is pedestrians rolling the dice as they move around their community with life or death consequences. Unsafe design is really at the core of those flaws. The pandemic made this inherently risky transportation system even more clear, and that problem can't be ignored. When traffic volumes dropped worldwide and we saw fatalities in many countries drop as well, the U.S. actually saw the opposite. So less people on the road meant more people dying. And really what remained was a system that's designed for speed. So the drivers who were left on the road responded accordingly, driving faster and more recklessly because the system was designed to allow them to. And deadly consequences erased decades of important safety progress. Important to note in this conversation is, like other health epidemics, these impacts are disproportionately high in low-income communities, as you can see across the U.S. on the screen now, as well as in communities of color and, in particular, in tribal communities, despite underreporting in those areas. So how does Minnesota compare to these broader U.S. trends? Unfortunately, we're not immune to these broader trends in pedestrian and traffic safety. And as you can see from accidents across our state, this really is a crisis that touches every corner of Minnesota, from big cities to small towns, regardless of geography, size, race, class, or political party. Digging into the fatality data from Minnesota, overall road fatalities spiked during the pandemic and peaked in 2021. But even recent years, like 2024, were nearly as deadly. And 2025, last year, even though it saw less fatalities, is more of an outlier than progress towards meeting our 2030 goal of less than 225 fatalities per year. Looking specifically at bicycle and pedestrian fatalities, you'll see that those have also remained stubbornly high across Minnesota. Again, that's people going to and from work, that's kids going to and from school or recreation in the community, and that resulted in 2024, 61 fatalities across bikes and pedestrians. That's only continued to grow. And the same can be said about serious injuries for those same users. Important to note that despite being significantly safer than driving, transit riders also face a significant risk when walking to and from transit stops. Nationally, the death rate per mile is over 60 times higher in a car compared to on a bus, and 20 times higher than on a train. So transit is significantly safer. Yet in Minnesota, 40% of fatal and injury pedestrian crashes happen within 500 feet of a transit stop. Before I hand it off to Michael, I'd love to frame a couple of quick case studies that show, you know, when the rubber hits the road, MnDOT doesn't always put safety first. One local example is our work along Olson Memorial Highway, where 6 years of community organizing, advocacy, unanimous city resolutions, and other efforts have not really led to meaningful changes on one of Minneapolis's most dangerous roads. MnDOT left some interim safety fixes in place that really kept dangerous conditions for community members, including confusing intersections where most of those fatalities occur, as well as high speeds and inadequate bike ped infrastructure. the conversation today on the community-based safety bill is incredibly important for those reasons. And looking at large regionally important projects, this trend is similar. So on Rethinking I-94, a large regional project cost upwards in the billions, you can see they only included two criteria that regard safety when deciding between investment approaches, which, again, safety should be the top priority for road users and communities along those roads. And they include 14 criteria that address how quickly a lot of cars can move through the corridor at different times of the day and different speeds. So incredibly important. At this point, I'd love to turn it over to Michael to talk a little bit more about the human costs of this crisis.
All right. Did anyone get up early this weekend and watch the USA-Canada men's hockey finals? All right. You might have noticed after the game, they carried around a jersey on the ice of somebody named Johnny Gaudreau, who was a beloved hockey player who lost his life when he and his brother were killed by a drunk driver bicycling in New Jersey. The numbers are one thing, but every one of these numbers that you see, there's a name and a story behind it. There's a family that didn't get to have dinner together that night. Next slide. This is not just a Minneapolis-St. Paul problem. This is an enormous problem statewide. While transit can be a challenge in the Twin Cities and in parts of greater Minnesota, if you don't drive, it can be an absolute crisis. In Moorhead, there was an unfortunate fatality at an intersection that neighbors had been complaining were unsafe for a long period of time. In St. Paul, there's been a rash of traffic violence and folks that have died biking and walking within the city recently. Eden Prairie, a 2-year-old was nearly killed at an unsafe intersection, and in Becker, a 10-year-old was killed recently at an unsafe intersection as well. But I am here to also share some positive news with you. First of all, two things can be true. Minnesota can be among the best in the nation at transportation design and traffic safety, and we can be woefully inadequate in terms of what we need to do to protect people. I believe that both of those things are true. I can also tell you that there is plenty of money in transportation already to build safer roadways. This isn't about a lack of resources. This is about a lack of policy direction. Bad design is a problem throughout the state, and it contributes to a number of lives lost. To express some of the frustrations, in Rochester, in an area that the city had designated for high-density transit-oriented development, the Department of Transportation is bringing together a project that is designed for a high-speed highway. It's incredibly frustrating to see that happen. In St. Peter, their main street is far too fast because it's U.S. Highway 14. In Duluth, the intersection at 26th Avenue was acknowledged by local designers that it is not safe for pedestrians and cyclists, but are moving forward with the design anyways. Even in tiny Cook County, UT 87, a township road, and that is the road that, in fact, there's somebody is sitting on right there. That is a road that they were forced to raise the speed limit up to 30 miles per hour, which is grossly unsafe for that area, but they were following the rules that are on the book. Brooklyn Center, Highway 252 has a number of concerns for areas surrounding that. Next slide. The solutions can be incredibly inexpensive, but they're often not allowed. What you're seeing there is a raised crosswalk, which does a fantastic job of slowing traffic fatalities. All those fatalities that I showed you earlier was a situation where this likely would have prevented that tragedy from happening. However, this is largely prohibited by our current Department of Transportation state aid standards and most places where this would be beneficial. The key thing here is we need to do better with our programming. The Bike Helsinki thing that you see right there, we are going to put together an opportunity for people to go learn from Helsinki. They're one of many Finland is one of many countries around the world that is much safer than the United States. In fact, a city similar climate and similar geography as Minnesota basically went an entire year without a traffic fatality. That is something that can happen here. Deaths on roadways are a policy decision. And finally, it wouldn't be a presentation to the Transportation Committee if we didn't talk about e-bikes and e-motos, and I want to assure you that we're working with partners throughout the state and looking forward to bringing some legislation forward with hopefully bipartisan support that will clearly articulate what is a dangerous e-moto and separate it from an e-bike. And I know that's been something that you're hearing a lot from your constituents. We want to work with all interested parties to ensure that we are meeting the needs of citizens of the state of Minnesota. Thank you for the time.
Thank you again. We're happy to answer any questions. And again, this is a pedestrian and bicycle safety crisis. It's a road safety crisis. And it's really a public health epidemic that needs statewide solutions. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. I just remember that I didn't turn my microphone off. I'm going to have to remember how this works here. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to preface this by saying that any death on our highway systems, any death on our road systems is a tragedy, and we can do something about it. But my question is, if I'm looking at this graph correctly, I see that the pedestrian and bike share of U.S. traffic fatalities from 1994 to 2023, if we're looking at the last 25 years, we're seeing an increase of about 5% of the share. It goes from 2000s at 15%, 2025, 2026 is at 20 to 21%, so 5% increase. Now, I did a quick little Google search, and it says that that biking and walking has increased dramatically in participation over the last 25 years. I saw a statistic that said from 2016 until today, biking and participation in biking has increased by 14%. Now, if that's the case, and this truly is a crisis and an epidemic, wouldn't we see a similar trajectory of maybe a 14% increase in fatalities if the share of biking and pedestrian participation actually is this crisis that we're talking about? Can you explain that to me? Because there seems to be at least a 9% gap in this argument that you're making.
Farrington.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Member. A couple of kind of key things to point out here, and I appreciate you raising there is a significant increase in demand for those who bike and walk around our communities. That's for a number of reasons. It's recreation, it's access to jobs, it's access to school. And that slide where we're talking about the change over time, that's actually just the share of total fatalities. So, you know, road safety experts wouldn't necessarily expect 14% more to correlate directly with 14% more crashes, which is kind of similar with driving. It doesn't necessarily kind of always answer those questions because the crashes around bike and pedestrian fatalities mostly happen in specific places, and I can't speak to that statistic on where those people are biking and walking, the 14% increase. But what I will say in Minnesota, from last year to this year, we have seen, in particular for bikes, almost a doubling in the number of fatalities. That data is preliminary at this point, not really released by DPS yet, but the Advisory Council on Traffic Safety does have that number. And about 75% of those happen at intersections. So those are areas where people are crossing traffic in like a crosswalk or otherwise. So I can't speak to the specifics of that, but going from about one in five or six fatalities to one out of every four, it really shows a disproportionate growth for those folks that we're not necessarily seeing for drivers as well. I appreciate the question.
Mr.
Wojcik, yep.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would add that the numbers are far too high, irrespective of the growth. And it's important to remember at the same time, a number of developed countries around the world have brought these numbers down close to zero. Well, we have not. So this is clearly a case where there are better solutions out there and we are choosing not to implement them.
Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you both for being here and starting this conversation. It's really important. You know, I think we're all here because we want to have a better, safer, you know, more thriving Minnesota, and keeping people safe on our roads is a key part of that. As you were kind of talking about solutions, I think this is really where I'm getting excited, is like starting this conversation about what new things can we be thinking about? Where can we be looking throughout the country, throughout the world for innovative solutions? And I love that you point out here the raised crosswalks. I have a question about that, which I'll get to in a second. But one thing I do want to highlight, we should talk about at some point, our near side intersection signals. This is a strategy in other countries that is used to make sure that pedestrians are kept safer. It keeps vehicles from rolling into a crosswalk, and just overall it better manages the flow of everything in that intersection. And as you said, intersections are the most dangerous area. So getting back to my question though, you said that the state aid standards put up barriers to us being able to have the raised crosswalks. Can you say more to that?
Mr. Wojcik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Member. Absolutely. And fundamentally, the state aid standards are still built around the concept that you want to move as many vehicles as fast as you can. And when you're trying to slow down traffic to save lives, you're not doing that. So oftentimes, if you're doing this on a state aid roadway, they're not going to allow you to do it on most roadways. In fact, when I was on the city council in Rochester, we were threatened with a lawsuit from MnDOT for having tabletops on one of our roadways. you can go through a very long and cumbersome process to try and get a variance, but the fact is that it is easy to do an unsafe design, and you are punished, if not forbidden, from doing the safe design in many cases, including tabletop crossings.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Have you taken a look at autonomous vehicles and where they are and what that – I've got to believe that they're better at not looking at their cell phones, you know, than us humans. So thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Wojcik.
Thank you for that question. We have never found an autonomous car that has drove drunk, so that is a positive. And the other thing about autonomous vehicles is today they are as the least safe that they will ever be. That technology will continue to improve. As an advocacy and safety organization, we have a number of concerns, but we are excited about the technology. But we don't expect entirely autonomous vehicles in the near future. But I think it's one of many solutions that are exciting for us to talk about.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you. Just about, it would be interesting for your organization to do that and to look at areas where, and I don't know if there are any in this country yet, but areas where there's heavy, heavy autonomous, and to see if that has had an effect on pedestrian safety. So just my two cents. Thanks.
Yeah. I bet we're going to have a time to talk about that, is my guess. Co-Chair Kosnick.
Thank you, and thanks for the presentation. I think road design is an important topic for this committee to talk about, and I've seen more in my district and talked to different people. We have a badly constructed roundabout, but generally roundabouts, everybody says there are more accidents but less people die, but people, when they're getting having to replace their quarter panels and get their insurance rates increased, they're not really happy about roundabouts. And so I think there needs to be better discussion and engineering, and I don't think we're the experts to do that in that regard. But another one was along Cedar Avenue, where they elongate kind of the tabletop that you just mentioned. There's a crosswalk, but they extended the median, so the crosswalk is not raised, but the median juts out about another 4 feet. And it's had a very tragic and sad death result of it. Had a good friend of mine, a little bit older driver, was trying to go north. And because the median extended farther than previously when they reconstructed it, he got confused. And I've driven it myself and have almost gotten confused on a number of times. Even now that, unfortunately, there has been a death there, I pay more attention. But rather than going all the way around to the proper lane to head north, because the median came out, he headed north on the southbound lane, had a head-on crash, and died. And so sometimes I think we outsmart ourselves trying to do all this new design work in that. And there's other instances that I get frustrated with, and I think I've heard from the public, whether it's roundabouts, these jet bump outs and things like that, that I think we're overthinking sometimes. And so I have a lot of caution when we start looking at new designs, and especially I think it's important that when road designs are built, that we do try to figure out how we get people as quickly to where they want to go, when they want to go in their vehicles.
Thank you very much, Co-Chair Kosnick. All right, I appreciate you guys being here. Thank you very much for setting the table on traffic safety and the work, at least that I would like to do here, is making sure that we are having a transportation system as much as possible that works for everyone that needs to get from point A to point B as safely and as efficiently as possible. So thank you very much for that. Appreciate it. Next, we're going to move on to House File 3429, Representative Kraft. And just as you are getting situated here, Chair Kosnick and I have talked about this. This bill does have a fiscal note to it, and so it does have some finance, but it also has some other stops to make. And so we have discussed this, and I commit to making sure that this comes back to transportation. And so it is a transportation bill, and moving forward, Chair Kosnick, do you have anything you'd like to add to that?
Yeah, there was a different bill that was similar to this that the Representative Kraft worked on, and I think the intent was real good. But we let a bill come out, go out of the committee without knowing how the cost was going to be paid. There is a fund dedicated or identified here, and so I want the bill to come back to the Transportation Committee as a courtesy. We're going to let it go to the next committee stop to have further discussion on, I think it's public safety. Is that going to be the motion the chair would like or the author would
judiciary.
Like? Judiciary. So I just want to recognize that this will not be a standalone bill. I want to, it's using transportation dollars, and even though we are heading and letting the other committee discuss it and review it and have more input, and I think there's some work on our side that you're working with one of our committee members to continue to refine the bill. I'm not comfortable with the cost associated with this, with the state budget where it's at. We don't have the targets, and the new budget will be released later this week. But I want to be able to look at the totality of what the committee's doing and spending before we commit to any specific bill being funded or sent directly to the floor unless there's agreement on something.
Yep, couldn't agree more. Thank you, Chair Gosnick. All right, Representative Kraft, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 3429 to be referred to the Judiciary Committee.
Thank you very much. And you have an author's amendment?
I do. I'd like to move the A2. What's
Representative Kraft moves the A2 amendment.
Which is the A2 will get the bill in the shape that I would like it, and briefly, it expands the offenses to which an intelligence speed assist would be required. There's some technical changes. It clarifies some expectations around rulemaking and adds a liability section to make it clear that auto manufacturers or retailers aren't liable for issues caused by the ISA devices.
Thank you very much. Any questions on the A2 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? The amendment passes. Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. This bill is about saving lives and reducing serious injuries. And it comes from the very simple premise that too much speed causes too much death on our roads. About 30% of the deaths on our roads are primarily caused by speed. We've averaged 116 speed-related deaths per year for the past 3 years. From a risk perspective, roughly for every 10 miles per hour increase in speed, the risk of dying in a crash doubles. So, for example, going from 60 to 80 miles per hour increases the risk of dying in a crash by 4 times. From a pedestrian perspective, we heard some of this. At 23 miles per hour, if you're hit by a car, there's a 10% risk of death. If the car is going 42 miles per hour, it's 50%. If the car is going 58 miles per hour, it's 90%. Now, look, while most drivers occasionally exceed the speed limit, research has shown that a small group of high-risk repeat offenders are the greatest danger. A New York study showed that drivers with 10 tickets contributed to deadly crashes at a rate almost 3 times the general population. As the number of tickets climbed, that risk rose to 5 to 20x the general population. So this pattern of a few repeat offenders causing a disproportionate amount of death and injury is very similar to DWIs. And in fact, it was last year while working on the ignition interlock bill that we heard here after the tragedy in my community at Park Tavern, it was then that I learned about intelligent speed assist devices, or ISA. They can provide a somewhat similar function for these super speeders that ignition interlock devices do for repeat DWI offenders. At a very high level, the bill requires those that drive egregiously fast or habitually speed to have an ISA device installed in their car for a period of time, and that period of time increases with the number of offenses they commit. I have some testifiers. I'd like to have them come and then come back and talk about more about the bill specifics.
Thank you very much, Representative Kraft. First up, we have on Zoom Pam Mason from Families for Safe Streets. If you could introduce yourself to the committee. Pam, evidently you're muted. All right, we'll come back to you, Pam. We've got Sarah Rizzer, also from Families for Safe Streets on Zoom. Sarah? Sarah.
I see. Right,
there you go. Come back to you, Pam. We've got Sarah Rizzer. We've got a delay. Perfect. Sarah, you're on. From Families for Safe Streets on Zoom. Sarah?
Yeah. Thank you very much. My name is Sarah Rizzer. I'm a member of Families for Safe Streets and mother to Henry Zietlow, a beautiful boy who needlessly lost his life in a preventable crash where speed was the factor. Henry was a bright young man who grew up in St. Paul. He joined the junior team at the Minnesota Boat Club on Raspberry Island, eventually becoming captain. He played violin with the Minnesota Youth Symphony and in a string quartet with Artaria. During his senior year, he qualified for a national science competition with his work studying mussels in the Mississippi River. Henry was silly and fun and loved to debate why St. Paul was superior to Minneapolis. Words can't capture the extent to which Henry was loved, how much potential he had, and how much I miss him every single day. Henry was killed in a preventable crash shortly after his 18th birthday. Sudden out-of-order losses are particularly traumatic, but nearly all victims of road traffic experience a secondary trauma when they learn that the at-fault driver won't be held accountable in a meaningful way. Of course, this varies from case to case, but so many survivors find it hard to accept that this magnitude of violence is often accepted and brushed off as little more than an unfortunate accident. Even if justice had been served and the driver held accountable, it wouldn't take away my life sentence of debilitating grief or bring Henry back. Henry would still have sacrificed his life and all he had to give. So I advocate for intelligent speed assist technology because it helps us keep our eyes on the prize, preventing harm before it happens, rather than addressing harm after it's been caused and can't be reversed. And this would benefit so many: the police, first responders, the at-fault driver, and most especially, potential road traffic victims and their families. Intelligent speed assist is a no-nonsense effective solution. Please support House File 3429. Thank you.
Sarah, thank you so much for being with us and sharing your story. Deepest apologies on the death of your son, and I just really appreciate you being here and talking with us about it today. So I don't know if there's a weird delay on the Zoom here today, but I just appreciate you being here. So let's go back and try Pam again on Zoom. Okay, Pam, we'll come back to you at some time, so we'll just try and connect there. So, Julie? Thank you for being here. Please introduce yourself to the committee and provide your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Tabke, members of the committee, Representative Kraft. I'm Julie Risser. I serve on Edina City Council. January 14th, 2019, a reckless driver killed my nephew, Henry Zietlow. Speed factored into the crash. Excessive speed is a public health crisis. I know this personally and strongly encourage you to pass the Stop Super Speeders bill. I got the call when I was at an MCAD faculty lunch. I walked away from the table, away from my colleagues, into an exhibit space. There, my world changed. There's been a crash. We lost Henry. Words cause physical change. I disassociated. Details still seared in my brain. The carpet pattern, the gray concrete. Somehow I got back to my colleagues in the table. I saw my hand floating up to tap a colleague's shoulder. I knew I had to leave. I was messed up and I couldn't drive. Henry was home from his first semester at Bowdoin College. He had a great sense of humor. The last time I saw him alive was Christmas Day. He wore pajamas. Families for Safe Streets members know a small high-risk subset of drivers repeatedly caught speeding are responsible for a disproportionate number of fatalities and serious crashes. June 16th, 2023, a man released for hit and run, exited 35W at over 100 miles per hour, his foot pressing the accelerator to the floor. He crashed into a car in Lake Street, instantly killing five young women, all active in their communities, loved, talented, and eager to start careers in the health and education fields. One, Sabrina Lee, an Edina High School graduate, only 17 years old. September 1st, 2024, a drunk driver sped into the Park Tavern patio, killing two people, one a mother of three, injuring at least a dozen more. One, Edina High School graduate, Theo Larson, also my neighbor who I watched grow up, now with traumatic brain injury that he has wrestled with. I was driving down Wooddale, and a young man sailed in front of my car on rollerblades with a hockey stick, pursuing a tennis ball. He went right in front of my car, but I was following the 25-mile-per-hour speed limit. I stopped. He was okay. I was rattled. He was not. Too many drivers move extremely fast, posing hazards to all of us. House File 3429 offers common sense technology that will make Minnesota roads safer. Please support it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And again, deepest sympathies on your loss. Pam, I understand that you're back on Zoom. If you could unmute.
Pam or Nicole, can you unmute and speak?
There. Pam, it looks like you are unmuted there. If you could just begin your testimony.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Pam Mason, and thank you, Chair and members, for the opportunity to speak. I'm a member of Family for Safe Streets, people whose lives have been shattered by traffic violence, and I'm here to urge you to please pass the Stop Super Speeders bill and require intelligent speed assistance technology for habitual and reckless drivers. If it weren't for a speeding, distracted, and negligent driver, I wouldn't be testifying. Nor would I be having to do it virtually here in Iowa, where I'm temporarily living to be close to my son, Austin, who now resides in a specialty hospital and fights every day to get the complex medical care that he needs. On September 25th, 2021, my 19-year-old son, Austin, walked into the kitchen as I was doing dishes, wrapped me in this bear hug, and kissed me three times on my left cheek. He said that he and his best friend, Rashawn, were going to go on a bicycle ride, and when they got back, they would make turkey spaghetti. And I kissed him back, and I said, be careful. And he said, Mama, I always am. I got the best mama. And little did I know that that would be the last time I would hear his voice, feel him give me that bear hug, or walk away. I had no idea that that would be the last time I would hear those words. You see, on their way home, a speeding driver struck Austin on his bicycle in the crosswalk at a Plymouth, in Plymouth. And a witness described my son as being catapulted in the air, flipping around like a rag doll before lying on his back. Bicycle parts and his shoes were scattered across the intersection. The driver didn't even stop. The cameras weren't on, and the driver was never found. As a result, Austin is blind, nonverbal, quadriplegic, and lives with a severe traumatic brain injury. He once dreamed of becoming a certified personal trainer. He finally found his passion, and all he wanted to do was help people be happy and live healthier lives. He was adored, by his friends and his family. He was funny. He was active. He was silly. We used to ride our bikes for miles and walk in the park with our dog. And sometimes we would just go swinging, and those moments are gone forever. Every traffic violence statistic represents a fatality or someone who suffered a lifelong injury like my son. And families like ours, families that are part of Families for Safe Streets, we feel this pain every single day. And none of us will have the opportunity to know what could have become of our children. Super speeders need life-saving technology that prevents them from endangering others, just like drunk drivers do when we think about the interlock devices. This legislation, while it won't solve every problem, we have to start somewhere. We have to start somewhere and help save more lives, protect families, and make Minnesota roads safer. You have the power and the responsibility to act. So I really appreciate your time and commitment to keeping Minnesota safe. And thank you for the opportunity to testify again today. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here with us today, Pam. I really appreciate it, and deepest sympathies on the injuries your son has suffered. And then last testifier we have is Ian Thomas from America Walks. Please introduce yourself for the committee and begin your testimony.
Yes, good afternoon, committee members. Thanks for the opportunity to speak. My name's Ian Thomas. I'm a resident of St. Louis Park, and I work with America Walks, which is a national education and advocacy organization focused on creating great, safe, walkable communities. So there are approximately 40,000 people killed on America's road system every year, and about 7,000 of those are pedestrians. And this is almost the worst statistic, the worst record of any country in the world per head of population. And speed is the most important factor in all of those fatalities. It's the most important factor in both the number and the severity of the crashes. And it really is a failure of public policy that we have this situation. It's a failure of public policy that we design roads that don't just allow people to drive at excessive speeds, but literally encourage high speeds. And it's also a failure of public policy that we allow vehicles to be sold to members of the community to drive on these roads that can go at dangerously excessive speeds. As we've heard, there is a seriously disproportionate impact on these fatality statistics of a small group of so-called super speeders, people who have, you might argue, a mental illness that results in their driving at excessive speeds, putting people in great danger. Intelligent speed assistance is a reliable and well-tested and flexible technology that can be used in a number of different ways. It can be used as a passive signal to the driver that they're exceeding the speed limit, or it can be used in an active mode where it literally limits the acceleration of the vehicle and maintains the vehicle at the speed limit. This bill, HF 3429, would target the super speeders by providing judges with a really valuable tool to prevent people with this tendency to drive at excessive speeds with a really robust method to make sure that they physically can't do that. Since something like 75% of convicted speeders who have their licenses revoked go on to drive again with a revoked license, that is not a successful option. And the requiring the installation of the intelligent speed assistance device would effectively stop the dangerous behavior.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Representative Kraft, do you have anything to add before we go to questions?
Yeah, I if I could. Thank you, all the testifiers. Briefly on the bill, key things to, there is a one pager here that you should look at, but key things to point out. Section 3 creates the offenses where an ISA device will be required to drive. It's 30 miles per hour over a posted speed limit or 100 miles per hour, unless the posted speed limit is 35 miles per hour or less, in which case it's 20 over that. It's if you go 20 over in a work zone or a school zone. Section 4 shows the length of time that the use of an ISA device were required, and it increases by the number of offenses. Section 6 describes the ISA program, including definitions, program provider requirements, a requirement to have a reduced fee program for lower-income individuals, very similar to the Ignition Interlock program. Section 7 is the appropriation language. It is in there. We have left a blank. It comes out of, will come out of the driver and vehicle services operating account. There's no general fund impact. The fiscal note did come out today, and so my intention is to, wherever that winds up, to have that exact number be put into the appropriation language. With that, I can take questions. I also thought it might be good. The Office of Traffic Safety Director Mike Hansen is here, and he's got a lot of background in this, so I thought I might ask him to come up and talk a little bit about the technology and some of the potential benefits for it.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah. Good to see you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. Happy to answer any questions that I can related to the topic at hand. I think this is something that is ripe for discussion. I think it's a step in the right direction. Some of you may have heard some of my comments in the media in the past when we talk about speed. As Representative Kraft alluded to earlier, speed is the one thing that makes every bad decision, every mistake behind the wheel worse, simply because speed is energy. Energy causes damage. Damage results in injury and death. As I sit here today, if there was one magic, if I had the magic wand, if I could solve one traffic safety challenge for Minnesota, and actually for the country today, it would be speeding, because like I said, it makes everything worse. When you combine speeding with impairment, with distraction, and with not putting a seatbelt on, all of those things are absolutely catastrophic. And the technology that we're talking about today is well developed. It's been actually around for many years. If you talk to our folks in the commercial fleet business, many of the semi trucks that you see running down the road in large fleets today have actually been using this type of technology for years. And so I think the time for the discussion and the exploration is really ripe today.
And if you could get your name on the record for me, I would appreciate it.
I'm sorry. I told myself to do that right away.
And I failed miserably on my first bill.
My name is Mike Hansen, and I have the privilege of serving as the director for the DPS Office of Traffic Safety.
Thank you, Director. Any questions for Director Hansen at all? Representative Jones. Oh, hold on to it for just a second then. Chair Kozak.
Thanks for bringing this topic forward. Something very worth us discussing. There's a lot of questions, so hopefully we have time. Just generally, you know, the mechanism, I have questions, and I'm just going to put them out there. Maybe the author, Representative Kraft, can help or others. The amendment took a lot of what was prescribed originally, so it's taken stuff out of our hands in terms of what the bill does and puts it into rulemaking. So I think that maybe that might be a lot of my answers. But how is this bill going to work in terms of how much does it cost the participant? You get an excessive speeding ticket. You get this option for you. How much will it actually cost? Do we know that? How much? What is the discount for the indigenous person section? And then how many people does this actually affect? Why isn't the current law working? We're on line 1.4, I believe, in that section, 1.12, it starts, by driving in excess of 100 miles per hour is revoked for 6 months. That's stricken, and then you're replacing that, if I understand basically what we're doing, right? Why isn't that working necessarily, and do we know how many speeders there were, like, pre-COVID in 2018, and then in the last 2 years, 23 and 24, do we know how many excessive speeding people are there that this would affect. So threw a lot at you just the sake of time.
That was a lot.
But if you could kind of, you know, address the, you know, how the bill is going to work and those kind of questions for us, and I know my members have other questions too.
Get your cousin. Were those questions for, were any of those for Director Hansen? I don't want to keep him up there if he's not.
Well, Director Hansen might be able to tell us how many, what the recent excessive speeding tickets were like in the most recent years, pre-COVID, and then to now. So how many people this would affect, and then the author can direct them to whoever's best qualified to talk to those.
We'll start with Representative Kraft.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kosnick, I don't have the fresh numbers in front of me, but what I can tell you from previous testimony and previous looks at that data, pre-COVID, across the state, just speaking with the State Patrol, they would issue between 400, 450 tickets a year for somebody exceeding 100 miles per hour. Post-COVID, that number doubled and then some beyond that to well over 1,000 violations a year. And that's just the state troopers out there that are reporting those numbers. We've seen some declines in that from what I'm understanding anecdotally talking with the patrol and with our other law enforcement partners out there, but we still have a tremendous issue with those super speeders out there. And certainly those ones over 100 miles an hour, they certainly grab those attention, but I'm aware of several instances in cities where vehicles are being clocked at 70, 80 miles an hour in 30 mile an hour zones. And those types of behaviors just are continuing. When COVID came along, a lot of bad habits developed because the roads opened up and there was a lot more lane space to use and abuse. And quite honestly, some of those habits have just outlasted the pandemic and continue to plague us today.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Chair Kosnick. I have some other specific data from 2024 that I got from DPS on this. At that time, 539 for speed in excess of 100 miles per hour and 1,352 35 miles per hour or greater, right? The other piece to this is that if you look in the fiscal note, it talks about the number of individuals I think this will address, and it says roughly 13,000. This also addresses people that habitually speed. They get three speeding tickets in 12 months. And that would also count as a offense that would be subject to an ISA guideline. You talked about cost. This doesn't address traffic ticket cost. This is trying to address, as with the ignition interlock bill, it didn't address the criminal penalties. This doesn't address that. This tries to address getting at a way of addressing behavior. The approach of 6 months suspension of license. What we've seen in both this space and the ignition interlock, people that have their license suspended very often will drive anyway, to the tune of roughly 75%. So what this says is rather than, you know, crossing our fingers and hoping that they're not going to drive, we're going to say, look, your license is revoked. Your way of getting it back is to have one of these ISA devices installed on your vehicle. And that, it turns out, to be a better way of affecting behavioral change. You asked the question about indigent folks, about low-income individuals. In the ignition interlock space, it's about half is the cost, and that's with the provider that does it. It's not to the state. There's third-party providers. So the bill says that it should be at least that should be, you know, half of what it would cost. There isn't a number yet because the service doesn't exist in the state. From a rulemaking perspective, I thought about this as well. In this program, if anything we've learned from the ignition interlock is there's a lot of really specific details about how the devices work and how they're tuned and what happens if someone has it stops working. That to put all of that in legislations seemed to me to be potentially unworkable, but also maybe unwise, because it's the level of flexibility that you would want the department to have to do it. So that's why I went down the rulemaking, with rulemaking direction, especially with everything we learned in the ISA space. Mm-hmm. Did I address your questions?
Chair Kosnick, you have any other follow-up?
Yeah, just to clarify, so we don't know if someone goes on this program, gets excessive speeding, they get offered, you get your choice, right? Either revoke or this program, or are we just doing this program? We don't know how much that will be, if it's like $600 or $500. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah, the way it works is when you get one of these, your license is revoked, and then to get it back, you can either leave it out for a period of time or you can go down this path. to get your license reinstated, the reinstatement fee is, I believe, is $30 in this space. It's much higher in the DWI space. But the cost of the program then, we don't know for sure, but it'll probably be something in the neighborhood of the Ignition Interlock or a bit less, because there's not the same. With Ignition Interlock, you put the device in and it has to be calibrated every 60 days. This, there's no calibration needed. It's really just putting it in and taking it out.
Chair Kozlik.
Thank you for clarifying that. So we don't know what the cost is of the program. Do we have an idea even? Roughly? I think there's only two other states that do this right now. I don't know what they charge.
Yeah, I don't know if the top of what they charge, but Ignition Interlock tends to charge from $100 to $200 a month for the service. And this, I think, would be in that range, probably trending towards the lower side of that. But that's one thing that in rulemaking that they would work with the providers and make sure that they were charging something that met the work that they were doing.
Yeah, I appreciate the honesty and the dialogue. As a legislator, this is our job to kind of know these things, and I like to limit the amount of rulemaking that we give to the executive branch, and so that's where I have a lot of concerns. The intent of having excessive speeders slow down, I'm not sure that very many people would argue with that. But in terms of legislating, we don't know what the program cost, and I'm not always comfortable ceding legislative authority to the executive branch through rulemaking.
Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Kraft, for bringing this forward. Can you say the number again of the percentage of people who drive even though their license has been revoked?
Representative Kraft.
Yeah, a number of studies have shown it to be about 75%.
Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Kraft. Do we have a sense of why that is?
Representative Kraft.
Well, I mean, from what I've heard, and a lot of this is on the Ignition Interlock side and talking with folks that are, close to folks working it, is they, in the Interlock side, one of the problems was that to get on the program required this huge upfront cost of $680 that people didn't have. And so what we did is we changed that last year to say, look, you're still going to have to pay for that, but you don't have to do it to get into the program. So with some folks, it's the upfront cost of getting in, and that seemed to be the barrier. And so my hope is that with the way this program is structured and what we did with Interlock, that it reduces the barriers to people to come on. The other thing would be is that there is a monthly cost to get the device installed and to pay for that. And some people may say, I don't want to pay for that. That's why the requirement here to have a program for low-income individuals. The other piece I would point out, too, is one of the changes we made last year and is in this bill, and this is, I believe, in Section 2, is making it a gross misdemeanor. It used to be just a misdemeanor in the Interlock side, making it a gross misdemeanor if someone is supposed to be on the program and then drives a car that's not equipped with the device. So there's more penalty, they can be held more accountable if they do that.
Can I have one follow-up?
Yes,
thank you. I think that's a really thoughtful way of approaching this issue. I would maybe just add that I think the more transportation options that we have in general, then I think that it would make it easier for people to still be able to get around, even if they aren't able to pay. And so having these options, if you want to go use this technology, great. But if we have transit, biking, walking, and that's available, then if people need to adjust for their own financial circumstances, then that's a good option too.
Yeah, that actually, may I?
Yes, Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Jones. Yeah, you point out a really good reason. Because many people don't have options and maybe don't want to pay or had trouble affording it, that they would make the choice to drive.
All right. Representative Olson, did you want to talk?
Yes, please, Mr. Chair.
Representative Jones? No? I know, I was just messing with
you. I'm confused now.
That's all right. Representative Olson.
Perfect. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kraft, I think this is a really interesting way of getting at the root cause of the problem. How do we fix the issue of excessive speeding and individuals who are habitually doing this? I really appreciate the concept that we're attempting to hold accountable the people who are actually performing these problems. We're not trying to make cars illegal across the country. We're not trying to outlaw a specific type of gasoline or something, trying to get at an overarching statement. We are getting to the root cause of the problem and saying, how do we save people's lives? Well, not restricting the freedoms of other human beings. I think it's common sense. An individual called this potentially a mental illness of driving excessively over and over and over again. You know, there's all across our society, you can see instances where these individuals habitually commit the same crime over and over and over again. And by stopping that, we protect people's freedom. So I'm really encouraged by the direction in which this bill is going, holding people accountable for their own personal actions. Now, I have some concerns. I have some questions, and I think that can actually be pounded out, and I think we can come up with a really decent product here. But one of the things that kind of came to my mind is, in my family, we have two vehicles. Would I be required to get that on both my vehicles or just my primary vehicle? How would that work? Can you explain that, please?
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Olson. Right now, the way the language works is that you would be required to have it on both vehicles. You could make a point saying, you know, only on the vehicle that you're driving, you're not driving another one. But right now, the language says you're required to have it on both vehicles that you own.
Okay,
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that like Chair Kosnick said, there's a little bit of rulemaking that I like to tighten up. Maybe a little bit of the cost if we can get that worked on. I think the concept is stellar. Holding people accountable for their own personal actions, not this blanket one-size-fits-all policy, will, in my opinion, and I think the data will prove, that it'll save people's lives. And I think that's the direction that we need to go as a society, realizing that we hold people accountable for their actions. We don't hold society accountable for other people's actions. I can't tell you how many push-ups I've had to do in the Army because someone ruined it for me, and I'm tired of that. I don't think it's an appropriate way of legislating. It might be the appropriate way to do it in the Army. It's not the appropriate way of doing it as a state. Thanks so much.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Kraft. My question is just a little bit about the 75% of people that reoffend or drive when they don't have a license. Do you have any statistics that tell us how many of the people reoffend with that same action? I mean, how many people drive fast again? Do we know that number?
Representative Kraft.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy. In this space, I don't have the specific data on this, but what, you know, there was that New York study that said that people reoffended were much more likely, and certainly in the DWI space, it was really stark that as soon as you did it a second time, like most people, if you get caught once doing it, like, oh, you know, dang, I did it, and learn, and most people don't reoffend. But the person that goes and does the second offense is one that's more likely to keep doing it. And I think that's what we see in this space. And so the bill is structured to, as you have more offenses, to have more time required on ISA.
Representative Murphy.
Yep, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Kraft. So if we don't know for sure if we're changing the behavior of that guy that's speeding at over 100, does that mean the penalty worked for them? I mean, if I speed, especially in a certain area, I definitely know the next time that that's something I won't do again. And so if you're telling me they drive, that's one thing, because they maybe have to drive for other reasons like the person with the DUI. But if they're not speeding, then it looks like this could be more of a nanny state to watch the behavior. And so I want to know if our laws are in place to do what they're doing, and if they're working as laws, we don't need to have an extra blanket over the top of them. The laws should do it. And if the laws aren't strong enough, maybe we need to change the law. Maybe we need to make it stiffer, too. But this is a way that I think we're able to watch over people. And they may never offend again, but we're still going to watch over them. And I'm a CDL driver for 33 years. I don't like what they did to those big companies. I was an independent. I don't like when they do that. I think I'm in charge of being able to run the way I want to run down the highway. And it doesn't have to be at 10 miles under the speed limit, because that's what they thought was a better idea. So anyway, respond to that if you can. Thanks.
And just so everybody knows, we're going to need to wrap this up pretty quickly here. We've got a couple other bills we want to get through today, but this is a really important big topic that I'm glad everyone's having a good, solid discussion on it. But let's tighten it up a little bit, Representative Kraft.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy. A key thing about this technology, there's no watching that's happening, right? The technology has knows where you are and in the car, and knows the speed limit, and then limits you from going over that speed limit. There's no one else watching to see where, you know, what's happening here. And I understand your point, but these are people that have demonstrated dangerous behavior, life-taking behavior on our roads, and from a public safety perspective, I am absolutely fine with saying, you know what, because you've demonstrated this, and maybe you've repeatedly demonstrated this, that we need to put something on your car to keep the rest of the public safe. I think that's a position I'm very happy to take.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Myers. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Kraft. Let me first out say, Director Hansen, thank you for, I think the call that we had was last week to just to get a little, you know, get my feet wet a little bit. I was, you know, also appreciative of Representative Kraft. Previous work and this work, I know we've had several conversations back and forth, and even this weekend, you know, trying to work on some of this language. I do, again, appreciate the steps you took with the amendment, adding some of the stuff in there. My hope is that we can continue to have these conversations. You know, I think we're sitting here, you know, everybody knows that we have a tie, and we're all trying to get something across the finish line. Don't know what that version is going to look like, but my hope is that we can continue, you know, working forward, you know, to get something in place.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
I'll be brief. I've seen these people on the freeway. They're on 674, 494. It's insane, you know, and I have noticed it's a little less, but and it's worse during the day because I think the freeways are open. So, and it and have you thought? I mean, I think people that do this regularly, they should be thrown away in jail and throw away the key. I mean, that you know, I'm not even sure that they should have, you know, the ability to put this on their car. You know, I mean, it's that, you know, if you're consistently doing that, so I support the way you're going, you know, with this. So I'm going to, again, I'm not a big fan of creating another program. I am a huge fan of increasing the penalties for, you know, for excess speeding. So I hope you keep working on the bill, and I know Representative Myers is working on it with you, and, you know, you've got a few more committee stops. So, but I will give you a yes because I think it's good to go a little bit and do something about this. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. I neglected to ask if there's anybody in the audience that would like to testify on this. Thank you very much for not testifying on this. And so we can just making sure we covered that. So I just want to say thank you very much, Representative Kraft, for all of your work on this. This is a really important topic. It's really important to safety, and I just appreciate this. I'd also, and you and I have talked about this previously, I'd like you to also, as we continue to move this forward, to find out ways where we can, whether it's within the context of this bill or other bills, for also addressing reckless driving at the same time, and people who are avoiding stopping or not stopping at red lights and those things that we know are causing a lot of pedestrian and bike and other drivers and other passengers within vehicles deaths and injuries as well. So I just appreciate you and all of your testifiers who have been here talking about this today. So with that, will you renew your motion and any closing comments?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you everyone in the committee for really appreciate the thorough discussion. I think it's making the bill better. I'm open to all the conversations. And but I do want to say thank you to the testifiers. As a parent, to hear those stories is just gut-wrenching. And we can save lives with this. And you know, so I think it's imperative on us to try to do this. So thank you all.
Thank you. With that, Representative Kraft renews his motion that House File 3429, as amended, be re-referred to Judiciary and Finance and Civil Law Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? The motion passes. All right, we're going to change the order up a little bit here and skip my bill for right now and head to House File 3431, Representative Sensenmuir. Because it's a really good bill, is why. Representative Sensenmuir.
Thank you, Chair Tapke. I believe we are referring this to the Judiciary Committee. Is that correct?
Yep. Okay. Yep. So if you'll move your bill, Representative Sensenmuir moves that House File 3431 be referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. Please explain your bill.
Thank you. So co-chairs Tapke and Kosnick and committee members, I am here today to talk about House File 3431, which would expand the current traffic safety camera pilot that is happening currently in Minneapolis and Mendota Heights due to legislation passed in the 2024 session. I come to this bill with a simple premise that I believe we are in somewhat of an abusive relationship with our cars, in which we accept a lot of bad things that happen from cars that we would not accept in other circumstances. To give an example, earlier we had a presentation where a woman's face was up there just a few days ago, blocks from the Capitol. Lisa Gugier, who was a St. Paul resident, was hit and run. She passed away this weekend. She was the third pedestrian killed this year in St. Paul. I agree with the premise from Joe Harrington and the presentation earlier that most of the work we should be doing in this committee is really on road design. How do we design our streets in a safer way? Because right now our roads and our streets are designed to get people in and out as fast as possible. And that is a goal that is just fundamentally, I don't think, compatible with the way that we want to value human lives. But in the meantime, while we are working on designing our streets to be safer, we can take steps to make our roads safer even if we can't redesign them. We just heard an option from Representative Kraft, and I do believe that traffic safety cameras are another option that we should be considering. We passed in 2024 the bill to do a pilot program of traffic safety cameras in Minneapolis and Mendota Heights. Those programs and those pilots have been in play for a few months, and we have really strong data to show that people are driving safer when they know cameras are out there, when they know that they are being watched, and when they know that there will be consequences for their driving. I know that there have been concerns with this bill in the past around real concerns around surveillance, which have come from both sides of the aisle, right, from some of the most left members of our caucus, some of the most right members of your caucus. I will say we did a lot of work in 2024 on surveillance and making sure that we were keeping the data tight, that we were protecting people's privacy. By the time that we passed the bill, a lot of you know, organizations that normally had concerns were neutral on it, including the ACLU. Another thing that we thought a lot about when we passed the bill in 2024 was to make sure that this was not going to be a cash cow for municipalities. There have been, you know, really bad examples, I think, of some of these traffic safety camera programs in other cities where people's fines are kind of exponentially growing. People that are already marginalized that live in communities where streets are designed to not be safe are then getting ticket after ticket, and those fees are growing. So we tried to put in a lot of restrictions there. The point is not for cities to get money from this program. The point is for our roads and our streets to be safer. We also put in a lot of safeguards around the number of cameras. So it is one camera for every 10,000 residents, which means in Minneapolis, I think it's about, you know, 40 cameras total as part of the program. And we also thought a lot about how do we make sure that cameras are not just focused in one area, but across cities, across communities, but in the place where they are most needed. So with that, I would like to bring up Ethan Folley from the city of Minneapolis, who has been a really key partner in designing the program there, to talk a little bit about the program in Minneapolis and some of the really strong data we have seen thus far.
Thank you. Mr. Folley, thank you very much for being here. Just so everybody knows, we're going to try and keep testimony at about two-ish minutes for things. If we could do that, I would appreciate it. And please introduce yourself and begin.
Chair and members of the committee, my name is Ethan Folley. I'm the Transportation Planning Manager for the City of Minneapolis. I also am the Project Manager for the City's Traffic Safety Camera Pilot Program. Thank you, Representative Sensimura, for your work on this issue. As was mentioned, we do have a pilot in place in Minneapolis now, and this is addressing the number one safety challenge we have in Minneapolis, which is speeding. More over the last 4 years, now it's 50 people in the last 4 years have been killed in crashes that involve clear speeding just in Minneapolis. And those are all terrible. They should all be alive today. But it's extra bad that most of those people, they were not speeding themselves. They were killed by someone else who was. And so far, we launched our pilot in October 1st as one part of our overall work to address these challenges. And In the first 3 months since we launched, we saw a 51% reduction in drivers going 10 or more miles an hour over the speed limit at camera locations, and a 58% reduction in drivers going 20 or more miles an hour over the speed limit. We would expect, I expect, based on what we've seen in other cities, that this will continue to go down over time as people get a warning and learn about the program and then do not get another one, which is what we want. I also just want to note, overwhelmingly, people are not going more than 10 miles an hour over the speed limit, right? This is addressing, in Minneapolis, now it's addressing less than 1.5% of drivers. And so this really is about addressing, similar to the last bill, folks who are just going too fast and unsafe for the conditions. I want to acknowledge, so we've seen the good early results in Minneapolis. There's also been, this is really proven around the country. So FHWA, the Federal Highway Administration, says that this is, speed safety cameras are a proven safety countermeasure. MnDOT did a study of in 2023. They found that every methodologically sound study of speed safety cameras found reductions in speeds, in crashes, in injuries, and deaths. And that just makes sense because you don't want to get a $40 ticket every time you drive by on the street, so you slow down just a little bit so you're not going more than 10 miles an hour over the speed limit. And that's what we're seeing so far in Minneapolis. I'll just also point out that there are a lot of protections in place in the bill and in our program locally in Minneapolis, as Representative Sensenmura mentioned. And with that, we've seen a significant increase in the support we're hearing from community members. So an engagement we did last year in Minneapolis, we heard supportive comments from more than 80% of people who engaged around our pilot program. Now, I will admit that I get the angry emails, but I only get a couple. Right? Like, since our launch, I think I've gotten like five. I mean, and I've gotten more saying thank you, and I get messages from people saying, I got this, fine, I support this program. And so I think we see that support because of the protections that are in place to make sure that this is truly about addressing the safety challenge and not about those a revenue generation and doing it in a way that protects privacy. So thank you very much, and we'd love to see the program permanent.
Thank you very much. And our next testifier, are you good with going to the next testifiers? Next testifier, good luck keeping her under 2 minutes or so, to me, is Mayor Kali Herr from St. Paul. We're having Zoom issues today. Mayor Herr. State your name for the record and proceed whenever you are ready.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Chair, member of the committee. It's good to be. Oh, can you hear me?
Yes. Say your name for the record, proceed whenever you are ready.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Chair, member of the committee. It's good to be. Oh, can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. Sorry about that, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I am.
Whatever you want, Rich.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Members of the committee. It's good to be. Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. Sorry about that, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I am.
Whatever you want, Rich.
Oh my God.
I don't know what's happening. All right, I love you, but we're gonna skip you. We'll come back. Ann Finn.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair.
Try to beat that.
Yes. is Ann Finn, and I represent the League of Minnesota Cities, and I'm very sorry to be interrupting our newest member mayor. The League of Minnesota Cities is a statewide association representing 842 of Minnesota's 856 cities, and we are here to support House File 3431 and to thank Representative Sansomira and Representative Kraft for authoring and carrying this bill. We supported the legislation that established the pilot program that you heard about earlier in 2024. The League has long supported the ability for local authority to use technology to enhance public safety and respond to public demands for traffic enforcement. The expansion authorized in this bill is permissive and is supported by cities. I just want to note that I don't see a scenario where the cameras would replace local law enforcement, but the cameras could be used as a valuable tool to deter dangerous driving, as you've been hearing about, and to target areas of communities that would benefit from another layer of safety. So this is simply another tool in the toolbox for our public safety folks and communities, and I want to thank you today for hearing my testimony.
Thank you very much. And next we have Abby Braddock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Abby Braddock. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Asphalt Pavement Association, and I'm here to strongly support this bill that would remove the sunset not only on cities but on MnDOT's work zone speed safety camera program, allowing for those speeds, that speed enforcement to continue as a permanent tool to reduce speeding and protect workers. A lot of the testimony you heard was about cities, but this is a very important aspect of this program as well. Behind every barricade is a crew member, someone's parent, spouse, or child, working inches from live traffic at highway speeds. Work zones are among the most dangerous environments in our transportation system. I have so many quotes that have actually already been quoted directly, so I won't keep going with those numbers. But speed is consistently identified as a major contributing factor in our severe crashes. And a recent industry survey found that 60% of highway construction firms reported at least one crash into their work zone in the last year, 60%. We've tried signs, we've tried messaging, we've tried asking drivers to slow down, but it hasn't been enough. The reality is there are not enough law enforcement officers to patrol every work zone every day across Minnesota. And traffic stops in high-speed corridors place officers themselves at significant risk, as roadside stops remain one of the most dangerous routine duties in policing. Automated speed enforcement provides consistent, visible enforcement without putting another person on the shoulder of the road. And it works. National and international evaluations have shown speed reductions between 20 and 60% in enforced corridors and reductions in injury crashes, commonly ranging from 15 to 30%, with some studies showing even greater effects. There is no other method of reducing these dangerous situations that is better than speed cameras that we know of. The lower speeds matter, which was discussed by previous testifiers. The relationship between speed and crash severity is not linear, it's exponential. Even modest reductions in speed can significantly reduce fatal and serious injury risk. These systems are not about revenue. The fines are modest. First offenses are warnings. They don't go on a standard driving record for non-commercial drivers. This is about behavior correction and not punishment. If we want to retain skilled workers in the road construction industry, if we want young people to enter this workforce, we must show them that their safety matters. Our crews will tell you that speeding has never been worse. If we can reduce speeds, we can reduce severity, and then we can reduce severity, we can save lives. Our workers deserve protection equal to the risk we ask them to take. Thank you very much for this legislation.
Thank you, and we're going to try Mayor Herr again.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Kali Kerr, and I'm the mayor of St. Paul. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it is a great pleasure to be here with you today, and I'm so thankful for the opportunity to participate remotely. I'm looking forward to being back at the Capitol with you all in person soon as well. As I stated, I am the mayor of our capital city, St. Paul, and I'm here in strong support of House File 3431, the bill that takes the speed camera pilot project and makes it statewide. That enabling legislation would make it so my city of St. Paul could also have this authorization. I know today's focus is on traffic safety, and I really appreciate that. There has been an uptick in faster driving all across the country, and that includes St. Paul. This is why it's not a surprise that nearly 20 states have laws that allow speed cameras. St. Paul Police Commander Jeremy Ellison, who oversees our city's Department of Traffic and Pedestrian Safety, has been in support of this for over a decade. He shared with me that what is being proposed in House File 3431 is something that the city should support as a way to improve safety. We saw that in New York City, there was a 60% decrease in speeding when cameras were placed near schools. We will likely see similar results. This will impact traffic crashes, mostly serious injury and fatal, if implemented appropriately and thoughtfully. I know Minneapolis started this in 5 intersections. I would like the chance to work with my police department and our public works to identify our targets. This is about safety. In addition to the safety aspect, I know you are all well aware of how thin our law enforcement entities are stretched across the state. Departments are short-staffed and officers are overworked. Speed cameras would alleviate the number of sworn officers designated to these assignments and allow these resources to be deployed in other areas within police departments. If a pilot is working so well and possibly saving lives and creating additional capacity, I think it is incumbent to think about expanding it, and that's the opportunity you have for the 2026 session. I want to thank Chief Author Representative Samira and the cities of Mendota Heights and Minneapolis for leading the way on this. Thank you for the time today. And again, just a reminder that this is about safety. I know there's been concerns about surveillance in the past, but this would do a lot of good for our cities and our state. Thank you so much for the time today.
Thank you very much, Mayor Herr. Is there anybody else that would like to testify who is in the audience today? All right, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really, really dislike speeding, excessive speeding. I'm guilty of the 5 mile an hour. But I really have a lot of concerns about the surveillance. And I know a lot of us do on both sides of the aisle. This is that. I think the world is changing fast in regards to the autonomous vehicles, and they're probably going to make them so they can't go 100 miles an hour on a road that's built for 70. And so I'm very reluctant to support the program in the first place, but certainly extend it. Right now it's going until 2019. That's 3 years from now. So I'm not sure why we're talking about making a decision to go beyond that. So yeah. Thanks.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for bringing this bill forward, Representative Sensenmira. I'm in support of this. I think that the data shows that the effectiveness in Minneapolis. I'm curious if you thought about if we're extending this to local control, which I think is also a great part of this bill, if there's anything that you would put in about reporting the success or failure of this. I think with a pilot program, there's an incentive to bring the data back, but if that was anything that you would consider as hopefully other cities are able to roll this out.
Representative Sensenmira.
Yes, definitely. And just to speak to a little bit to Representative Anderson's comments, I think part of the reason that I am bringing this bill forward is that when we see something is working, right, and we have some initial data, I think it's incumbent on us to think about how we could expand it to other jurisdictions. And I have heard from many cities across our state, including we just heard from our former colleague, Mayor Herr of St. Paul, saying, why can't I try this? Why can't I try this in my city, with some of the restrictions that we have on there? So definitely open to adding language around the reporting. And, I think that let's try it in a variety of jurisdictions, see what's working, what's not. I think it's also important to say that it is about local control. No one is making any city or jurisdiction do this. This is, we're not making it so there will be cameras statewide. It is just giving all cities, all municipalities, the option to make their streets safer.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what I've found is whenever we have a new thing, we always see an initial compliance or an initial acceptance or, hey, it's a new thing, I got to adjust fire as a result of this new thing. Do we have any long-term data that will support that this is a sustained acceptance or a great accomplishment as a result, a long-term?
Yes. Thank you for the question, Representative Olson. So, and Ethan Folley might be able to speak a little bit more. I don't know if we have time for it, but I know that when we looked at the previous legislation, there is data from other states that have had these programs for longer that show that it is working. Obviously, in Minnesota, the program has only been around for a few months, so we have a short runway of the data. But I know that when we looked at other states, there's lots of data that shows that over time it does work.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I think it's that. Obviously, we don't have a lot of long-term data because this is a new program. I think that's the biggest concern that I have with the concept of it just being implemented August 1st of last year, and then now we're saying we should blow the doors wide open and allow anyone and their grandmother, as long as they can get at least 50% of the city council to accept it, to have it. I think we need a longer look. We need to be measured. We need to be focused, and we need to be responsible in how we outline this and how we release this into the public. So that would be kind of my idea on it. I'm not initially against safety. There's surveillance questions. We had that discussion last year or 2 years ago when we discussed it. I remain similar, but I'd like to see a longer trajectory here.
Representative Fogelman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I agree with everything that Representative Olson said, and I think we do need to not rush the end of the pilot program because, I mean, that's what we put it in place for, and it's not been in place that long. So with that, I'd like to move to lay over the bill, and I request a roll call.
You can move to lay it on the table, but like we're having a vote on this bill was the intent. So I'm not sure what Representative Fogelman, would you like to table this bill? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. Motion and roll call requested to table the bill that does not get discussed. Please call the roll.
Chair Tapke.
No.
Tapke, no. Chair Kosnick.
Yes.
Kosnick, yes. Vice Chair Ream.
No.
Ream, no. Vice Chair Myers.
Aye.
Myers, aye. Representative Anderson.
Yes.
Anderson, yes. Representative Fogelman.
Yes.
Fogelman, yes. Representative Green.
No.
Green, no. Representative Jones.
No.
Jones, no. Representative Joy.
Yes.
Joy, yes. Representative Cagle.
No.
Cagle, no. Representative Kraft.
No.
Kraft, no. Representative Luger-Nicolai.
No.
Luger-Nicolai, no. Representative Murphy.
Yes.
Murphy, yes. Representative Olson.
Chirp.
Olson, yes. Representative Sensimura.
No.
Representative Sensimura, no. Representative Scraba.
Yes.
Scraba, yes. Mr. Chair, the ayes are 8, the nays are 8.
The motion does not prevail. Chair Kosnick. Oh, you were on the list. You said you wanted to go last.
I think the last vote speaks for itself.
Okay. Representative Sensimura, do you have any closing comments?
Thank you. I appreciate the discussion. I hope we can keep talking about it. You know, I hear the concerns, but frankly, when something is working and when lives are at stake, I think it is incumbent on us to move with some urgency. And I will say that I've heard from a lot of cities who just want this option. And I think that in the spirit of local control, we should give people as many options as possible to help keep their residents safe while we do the really important work we need to do about designing our streets in a safer way. And just to the comment about, you know, rushing this, want to say that 20 states have passed some kind of traffic safety camera legislation. We are certainly, you know, not the first. We have looked at data about what has worked and what wasn't, and that's how we designed this legislation. So hope that you all will support moving this idea on so we can continue to talk about taking what works and making it statewide. Thank you.
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And because I think the safety of our kids and our families is so important, I'd really like to get it on record on who supports and who doesn't, so I would request a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Do you have anything else you'd like to add?
I would encourage our members who do support safety, but we have a pilot program in place that we can collect more data and make sure that this is something we want to do, and we don't see any particular reason to end the pilot early while we collect more data on that. So I would encourage my members to vote no.
That being said, I just want to make sure that since we're getting on the record on everything, is that when you have like drug trials and things like that for medical procedures and medicines and that kind of stuff, if something is working well and has proven to be working really well, it is unethical to not allow it to be expanded to other folks to be able to use those types of medications or prescriptions or whatever that may be. And this, to me, seems like a very analogous type of issue where we have instances where we are seeing 51 at 10 miles an hour over, 58% reductions at 20 miles an hour over, which we know is saving people's lives, saving reducing injuries and doing a really great job. So I just thank Representative Sensenbrenner for bringing this forward and everyone who has supported it, because we know that this does improve safety. It is proven now, and we should allow it for other folks to be able to use this wherever they want to. It's not being prescriptive and not forcing it on anyone, but allowing them to use it. Please call the roll, Tenzin.
Chair Tapke.
Aye.
Tapke, aye. Chair Kosnick.
No.
Kosnick, no. Vice Chair Ream.
Ream, aye.
Ream, aye. Vice Chair Myers.
Nay.
Myers, nay. Representative Anderson.
No.
Anderson, no. Representative Fogelman.
No.
Fogelman, no. Representative Green.
Yes.
Green, yes. Representative Jones.
Aye.
Jones, aye. Representative Joy. Joy, no. Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Kraft.
Aye.
Kraft, aye. Representative Luger-Nicolai.
Aye.
Luger-Nicolai, aye. Representative Murphy.
No.
Murphy, no. Representative Olson.
No.
Olson, no. Representative Sensenbrenner.
Aye.
Sensenbrenner, aye. Representative Scraba.
No.
Scraba, no. Mr. Chair, the ayes are 8, the nays are 8.
Thank you very much. With that, the motion does not prevail. Thank you very much, Representative Sensenbrenner, for all your work on this, and thanks to everyone who testified. Representative Norris, we are going to give you 3 minutes to go through your extraordinary yellow alert bill. And with that, I will move House File 1597 be re-referred to the Public Safety Finance and Policy Committee. And yes, this one will also come back here as well because it has similar issues, I don't know, similar concerns as we had with Representative Kraft's bill. So Representative Norris, would you please explain your bill?
Thank you.
Oh, actually, you have an 8-2 author's amendment. Please
that's
do
exactly
that
exactly what
first.
I was going to say, Chair Tabke. Do you want to take that up first?
Yes, please.
All right. Chair Tabke, members of the committee, it's great to be back in front of transportation. The A2 amendment makes some technical changes, updates some dates, and importantly, deletes the appropriation section because, good news, the fiscal note came back and it was $0.
Thank you. Any discussion on the A2 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? The motion prevails. Representative Norris.
All right. Thank you, Chair Tabke. So this bill would create a task force to look at establishing yellow alerts here in Minnesota. Yellow alerts are a form of public alert system to help law enforcement track down those who commit hit-and-run incidents that result in serious injury or death. They're similar to amber alerts for abductions. They've been implemented successfully in states around the country, like Colorado and California. And considering that less than 10% of hit-and-run drivers are arrested and successfully prosecuted in criminal court, this legislation is desperately needed. And in the interest of time with that, I will turn it over, proudly turn it over, to my constituent, Alexi Stefani, to share her story.
Alexi, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good afternoon, members of the Transportation Committee. My name is Alexi Stefani, and I'm a hit-and-run constituent. The implementation of yellow alerts in Minnesota is very important to me and would greatly benefit our community. Oftentimes, we don't realize how important something it is until it happens to us. On the run from law enforcement, a driver ran a neighborhood stop sign and collided with my vehicle's driver's side at approximately 65 miles per hour. My car then hit a concrete streetlight, a stop sign, went through a yard, and eventually hit a house. Although a demolished car remained next to mine, no driver could be identified for prosecution. After reading my no prosecution letter, I knew I wanted to dedicate my life to improving my community. I enrolled in law school, and I will actually graduate this spring. I published in the Star Tribune about the importance of yellow alerts, and I reached out to Representative Norris, who has helped me bring this idea in front of you today. Because of the accident, I missed a month of school and months of college athletics. The fear I had to overcome just to enter a vehicle or attend appointments is something that I can't forget. Giving up my senior season of college soccer because of my head injury is something that my three-year-old self, who dreamed to play forever, would never have imagined. Returning to campus, I struggled to find my classrooms and to remember my professors' names. All while the driver at fault walked free. There needs to be a change. A yellow alert system is the first step in the right direction and should be implemented in Minnesota. It wasn't the shattered window, the cuts, or the bone bruises that hurt me the most. It was the lack of justice that cut far deeper. My father raised me to understand that life is not about what happens to you, but it is about how you react to those things. Well, Dad, this is my reaction. Thank you for your time and for the responsibility you carry in protecting our community.
Thank you so much for your testimony and for being here with us today. Representative Norris, do you have any other testifiers or anyone else in the audience? Any questions from the committee on the bill? Representative Kozik.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And since we're short on time, I appreciate the testimony, and I'm glad that you were able to get that in before the committee's over. We would just like to revisit that there aren't any cost in this, but there are resources being expended, so we'll delve into that a little bit later in terms of the task force and all that kind of thing. I know the other committee is interested in hearing it still. Talked to Chair Novotny today, but so when the bill comes back to transportation, we can spend a little bit more time on that. So thank you.
Appreciate that. Any closing comments, Representative Norris?
Well, I just want to commend Ms. Stefani. I mean, she came to me not just with the story of what happened to her, but also, importantly, a solution. And it's been a joy to partner with her on that, and I hope that the committee will continue to do its part to make sure that stories like Ms. Stefani's are not repeated here in Minnesota in the future.
Thank you very much. And with that, I renew my motion that House File 1591, as amended, be re-referred. 1597, thank you. As amended, be re-referred to the Public Safety Finance and Policy Committee. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you very much. And I have my bill is also on now, and I'd like to get our testimony in from who has been patiently waiting on Zoom. And so I'll just really quickly say that this bill works with Office of Traffic Safety and works to allow cities really fast safety improvements and things. It's based off of an experience that we had in Moorhead this summer. So, Nicole, if you'd like to get your testimony on the record now, we'll come back to the bill at a later time. If Zoom will work, that is. Which is a tall order today. All right, we'll go ahead and reschedule for a different time. Nicole, thank you for sitting there through this whole end for us. I apologize. But thank you very much, everyone here today. Chair Kozik, do you have any final comments before we adjourn?
No, I appreciate the your first chairing of this committee.
Thank you very much. And appreciate everybody being here. And with that, we are adjourned.